everyone. Welcome to the Monday, May 10th meeting of the Joint Conference Committee on the Education Finance Omnibus Bill. I hope everyone had a pleasant and relaxing weekend and credited the moms in their lives appropriately. I'm going to give the House Public Information folks 10 seconds and see before we go live. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Joint House Senate Education Finance Conference Committee for Monday, May 10th. Ms. Sunderland, would you please take the roll on the House side?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Hassan.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
That is the roll for the House.
Thank you very much. Would the Senate be so kind as to call the roll on their side?
Senator Chamberlain.
Here.
Mm-hmm. Apologies, we're having audio issues. Senator Duckworth?
Here.
Senator Dornick?
Present.
Senator Eichhorn?
Eichhorn, present.
Senator Wieger?
Here.
All are present in the Senate.
Thank you, Ms. Donovan. Much appreciated. Mr. Chair, we spoke on Friday that today we wanted to focus in on particularly some of the teacher of color and American Indian teacher provisions. I think for the House, this I will start. There are others on the conference committee who are far more articulate and smart about this than I am. But for us, this is an important set of initiatives around equity. And I think we see equity as a value in and of itself, but we also see it as a strategic input for better experiences for our increasingly diverse student population across the state, as well as then that improved experience for students yielding improved outcomes for students. Changing the staffing is certainly a part of that. There's also issues around discipline that are a part of that. There's issues around curriculum that are part of that. There's any number of interlocking pieces to the jigsaw puzzle that is students' experience in schools and students' achievement. But this is certainly part of that. I had known for years and had worked on this issue previously that Minnesota was stuck at about 5% of its teacher corps being people of color or indigenous teachers. And we'd made a little bit of progress over the years, but not a lot. What I didn't appreciate was where we rank nationally in terms of the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. We're like, if we're not 50th, we're 49th in the country. And that to me was bracing to realize that not only kind of internally do we not do well on this and have we not gotten a lot of traction with previous initiatives, but nationally we are at the bottom in comparison to other states and their ability to recruit, train, and retain teachers of color and American Indian teachers in their schools. So we wanted to focus on that for a little bit today. I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you have comments. You've shared that this is also a Senate priority. I don't want to speak to you, but I'm hoping this is a place where we can find some common ground.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I was stunned also to see the numbers. Makes sense, not only common sense, but also data and science supported as well. So there are many areas of agreement, a couple of dollar issues here, but absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. So Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to open this up initially to the Teachers of Color Coalition. And this is a provision that was carried by Representative Hassan. She's far more knowledgeable about this. I don't know, Representative Hassan, do you want to make any comments before we open it up to our testifiers today?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm having internet issues, so it will only be audio today. As we all know, and we are well versed in, our students PIPOC students have came to us time and again to ask for us to change the course of action when it comes to their academic experience. And Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers was one of the top asks from our students, that they want someone who looked like them, who understood their struggles, who they can relate to be their teacher. And as you know, data shows even mainstream kids benefit from having a teacher of color. As for my own school experience, I'm a product of public education. And I have shared with many people that the first time I had teacher of color was in college. And I am someone who grew up in a city where there is a high number of people of color around. So one of the things that captured my heart was the students, and I don't know if we will have students today, I hope we do, was the students' testimony at one of the young women, I can't remember her name, I don't want to mess up her name, said she was only 7 years old when she went to her mother and said, "Mom, can I change my skin color?" She's a Black young woman. And for a seven-year-old to think that there is something wrong with who they are, that they want to change, then there is something twisted in our system and the way we deliver education to our PIPOC students. So this is, I'm very proud and honored to work with the coalition to carry this provision. I know many others have carried in the past. It should be a priority for all of us. It should be a state priority. It should be a priority for our educators, as much as it is a priority for our students. When our students come to us and tell us, this is how we learn, and they're leading the way on this issue, then we listen and we follow their directions because it's their experience. They're the ones that understand. I don't want to take up too much of the time. I see young people on the screen. I just got excited right now. but this is an issue that's important. If we want to close this, loophole that's, inequities in our education, having teachers of color and American Indian teachers in our classroom is part of the puzzle. And it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing for our students to have a meaningful experience in their academic lives. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hassan, and thank you for leading on this year. First on the agenda that I have before me and that has been posted publicly on the committee's website is Sandra Saucedo-Falligan, Achievement and Integration Coordinator for the South Washington County Schools. Ms. Saucedo-Falligan, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. My name is Sandra Saucedo-Falligan.
Please proceed, ma'am.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairs and conferees. My name is Sandra Saucedo-Falligan, and I've been an educator for over 15 years. I currently serve as the Achievement Integration Coordinator for South Washington County Schools. I speak as an educator of color and a parent of students of color. In my roles as a teacher and administrator, I've experienced not only the benefits I bring to my students, but also the trauma of being a student of a teacher of color. My own children have had similar experiences, but unfortunately for my children, it has been more traumatic having no or few teachers of color in their classrooms and schools. We need systemic, not piecemeal, solutions to the inequities we find in Minnesota schools. When we don't have a comprehensive state-supported plan for systemic change in place, we get experiences like a teacher of color walking into teachers' lounges and all of the people in the room get up and walk out. That teacher also receives no invitation to collaborate with others planning the same content. When having the courage to engage in professional conversations, their ideas and perspectives are dismissed on a consistent basis. You'll continue to get experiences of parents of color refusing to go to school events or even call a teacher because their concerns have been rebuffed or they have been treated in a way that made them feel less than. You'll continue to have students of color who feel disconnected and unmotivated because they don't see themselves in the curriculum, they don't see themselves in their adult leaders and daily examples. They don't have anyone or anything to connect with. You'll continue to have beautiful little brown children, girls like my daughter, come home and tell me that she wishes she had Caucasian hair so that she can be like her friends and her teachers. During the pandemic, my daughter experienced a cultural disconnect with her distance learning social studies class, responding to a statement made by her teacher that plantains are not in large demand because most people don't like them. When my daughter responded that people from the Caribbean, Latin America, and African heritage eat plantains, her teacher responded with a dismissive comment. I understand that, but I'm talking about most Americans. Most Americans don't like them. My daughter, who is of Afro-Cuban and Mexican descent, disengaged after that. You might see that as a small, unharmful comment, but the implicit message that her teacher sent to my daughter, who already does not feel like she belongs, is that she is not American, or at least not like most Americans. I am sure that teacher had no idea what she said and the damage that it did. But that is why we need an effective state-supported plan to make sure that school districts are able to create a safe and equitable environment for all students. Safe and equitable environments help all students. It expands the experiences of students of all backgrounds and allows them to form relationships and connect with all people and cultures. Being able to do that makes our students and our school system stronger. To address problems like these, some of the most important sections of the House bill would strengthen the world's best workforce and achievement and integration statutes, along with creating the Equitable School Enhancement Grant Program and funding for equity, inclusion, and anti-bias professional development. The proposed policy amendments would require that districts have plans to validate, affirm, embrace, and integrate cultural and community strengths in all of our students, teachers, and staff, to address institutional racism. All school districts and schools must knock down the barriers that have continued to underserve our students, especially our students of color, and have been barriers to attracting and retaining teachers of color. Your leadership is needed to set the policy expectations and significantly increase financial support for this work. In conclusion, I'd like to thank a majority of this committee for authoring and co-authoring the Increased Teachers of Color Act in the Senate and the House. I urge you to adopt the proposed investments from the House Omnibus Bill needed to increase the percentage of teachers of color and related policy proposals needed to ensure a strong return on your investments. Thank you for your full support.
Thank you, Ms. Sauceda Flanagan. Much appreciate your time today and insights. Next person, I apologize. I know I'm not going to get your first name right. Edirara McAllister, a teacher at Osseo Senior High. Please correct my pronunciation. Welcome to the committee and proceed.
Edirara McAllister. Good is it afternoon? I don't know what time it is. but let's do this. I'm very excited to be here and to be sharing space with you all. So thank you for that. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairs and Conferees. My name is Edera McAllister, and I have taught English language arts to urban learners for 7 years in a total of 3 different school districts, the last 4 being in Osseo area schools. I'm here to tell you today about some of the challenges I face as a teacher of color, specifically a Black female educator, and some of the differences I know I've made for scholars and staff alike. I'm currently on a leave of absence from teaching during this difficult time of the pandemic. Right now, my entire household, myself, my twin toddler girls, and second grade son are quarantined, having tested positive for COVID. So this is the first day that I've really been able to like sit for a long period of time, but I'm a little exhausted, so do excuse me for that. And so I did want to say that although I'm feeling under the weather, that it's super important for me to be here and show up today, and to, you know, be grateful for the opportunity to give my testimony and support all acts of increasing and maintaining American Indian and teachers of color in education in Minnesota. But my journey as an educator has been full of personal and professional challenges. I'm a first-generation college graduate and the first professional educator in my family, and I'm extremely ambitious. In my first year as an educator, I hit the ground running, destined to be what I set out to be, which was a teacher that looked like me, that shared parts of my background, and that cared and connected with me. I quickly convinced myself that I had learned where my power and control lay, which was in the classroom. And that was until it didn't anymore. And there was a need to integrate curriculum that is and was rigorous, accurate, anti-racist, and culturally sustaining. What I mean by that is I have become a valuable teacher in many aspects, while respected among scholars and producing academic and identity gains as a human in the education system, which ultimately led to my master's work and the creation of what is called Unity Circle, and is a means of connection for Black girls in the school environment in an effort to process and deconstruct our invisibility. As we understand, they are extremely harmful, things like that are extremely harmful and traumatic to the experiences of all scholars in schools, but specifically students of color. Unfortunately, it was very difficult to even get that far as I began in teaching, and not all of my work environments acknowledged my value, leading me to leave the inner city school districts and find a home at Osseo. Within this school district that I currently work and at the high school, under the leadership of my previous principal, Mr. Michael Lehan, I was able to experience learning and working in environments that validate, affirm, embrace, and integrate cultural and community strengths for all students, families, and employees. As part of that work, I served as a key part of the equity team and its staff training at Osseo Senior High School. And it was only through such opportunities where those in charge heard my voice that I felt an actual effort of retention as a teacher of color. It was a drastic shift from inner city to Osseo that is seen as a growing urban area, but it is not what everyone might think it is. So I've had my fair share of trauma and difficulties with just existing as a Black woman that wears a head wrap, and that being a question of my identity on a regular basis. And so it's been a fight over the 4 years that I've been there. And this year is the first year that I've truly learned what teacher burnout means. And before that, I was a firm believer that my passion for educational equity and the fact of achieving my dream of becoming an educator would fuel me for the fight. However, it's been my years of service to young people and my experience in education that taught me there are many things that teachers of color and American Indian teachers shouldn't have to fight for. Quite literally, our existence and retention of such can truly be a catalyst for the change needed within the school system today. To follow up, and just to give you a small piece of evidence, and truly all of my accolades in teaching come from young people. Anytime a young person thanks me for being their educator, that is all the glory that I need. However, a scholar wrote to me on Schoology, and this was in response to the read-in that we did at Osseo for Black History Month. And a portion of her message said, and I quote, "I just wanted to let you know that you did a great job with the Black History Month video when you were reading. It was nice to see someone who looked like me that held so much power when speaking," end quote. And that was from a young Black girl after I gave my initial video for the African American read-in. In conclusion, I thank you for your time, and I strongly urge you to support the adaptations to the House bill and all its efforts to engage, support, and protect American Indian teachers and teachers of color. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. McAllister, and best of luck and heal well to you and your children. You've got your hands full there. Next on the agenda is Amara McDonough, a student at Osseo Senior High School. Ms. McDonough, please introduce yourself for the record, then proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is McDonough. Good afternoon, Chair Dabney, Chair Chamberlain, and conferees. My name is Amara McDonough, and I am a senior at Osseo Senior High. Even though 61% of the students at Osseo Senior High are students of color, throughout my whole high school career, I've only had two teachers of color. I'd like to tell you the difference they've made in my success as a student in my life. First, I would like to tell you that I attended two completely different districts as a student. My first school district was K through 8 in St. Louis Park at a private Jewish school. At a private Jewish school that was predominantly white. There was no diversity other than the teachers that came from Israel to teach us Hebrew. With the lack of diversity, I felt completely out of place. Although I received an opportunity of a great education, it came at a cost of an identity crisis and misplacement and feeling as if I had to prove my worthiness. I knew the only way for me to find any aspect of cultural diversity and be a part of a community would be if I went to a public school in a different district. I will admit I didn't choose Osseo for the cultural diversity. I chose it for the sports, which were good then, and it still is predominantly white. But I knew there would be opportunities for me to have Black educators. And with my luck, I got the best one, Ms. McAllister, my first year, and Ms. Mitchell, my second year. Ms. McAllister has a personality like no other. Let's just get that out of the way. Coming to the district, I was clueless and knew nobody, but she made the classroom feel like home. She treats her students like they are her own children, but she puts time and effort into her lessons. She doesn't just come to class for the paycheck she receives. Ms. McAllister has taught me every day is not going to be easy, but the strong will persevere and take it day by day. I learned to always use my communication skills because if I don't open my mouth and use my voice, I won't be heard. Having a woman of color as my teacher, the same color as me, is also very important. Because it is also empowering. It gave me more drive to be better and more determination to be successful. I will be attending the University of Minnesota Twin Cities next fall, and I intend to major in political science because I want to become a lawyer and work for the Supreme Court someday. Coming into high school, I was in crisis, and Ms. McAllister helped me through the tough times. I was smacked in the face with the culture shock because I was unprepared by my previous school, and we were so closed off to the communities. And I was the only student of color in the school of 200 students. The people around me told me this would happen and I didn't believe them. But now that I reflect, I realize if schools would provide a more culturally diverse staff, the transition for students like me would be more smooth. But my struggle with trying to understand who I am helped me realize the importance of cultural diversity and why it is necessary for schools to ensure there is equal balance when it comes to different shades of colored faces we students see when we are taught in classrooms. A classroom is where kids are supposed to go to learn about how to be better for the future. By increasing the percentages of teachers of color in the education system, it will give more students of color opportunities, give them people to look up to, show them people who look like them with who are in power moving up and being successful. It is also important for white students to experience having teachers of color to provide them with different perspectives and cultural awareness. It's also important for white students to experience people of color who have a direct positive impact on their lives. I've been told that the legislature made a commitment in 2016 in several statutes that students should have teachers who reflect our diversity. I was just finishing seventh grade at this time. Now, as I'm graduating, I feel cheated by not having more teachers like Ms. McAllister. On behalf of my peers at my high school and throughout the state, I urge you to do all you can for real change with spending and policies to increase the percentage of teachers who reflect the rich racial and ethnic diversity that we students represent. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McDonough. Good luck at the university next year. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is Kurt Gibson, Grow Your Own Teacher candidate at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. Mr. Gibson, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Hello. Yes, my name is Kurt Gibbs. There must have been a typo. They put Gibson, but my last name is Gibbs, G-I-B-B-S.
Apologies.
And yep, no problem. So good afternoon, everybody here in the conference, the chairmen, the chairwomen, the conferencees. And my name is Kurt Gibbs, and I am a Black person of color and a teacher candidate. I'm just finished up my master's degree in the K-6 elementary education licensure program at the University of Minnesota. And because I was supported with the Grow Your Own grant funds, I was able to accomplish these goals. These funds that I received from the Grow Your Own program were essential in supporting me to remain in the program and complete it as I worked within my school as an Anoka Hennepin school district. I'm a para there, so I'm a special education para, and I was able to reduce the amount of work that I was doing before. I was working two jobs, both inside the school district, but with different programs, just so I can, you know, take care of my own here in my own house. And the funding allowed me to keep working as a para, but then reduce the amount of hours I was working. That way I can complete my education degree. I also want to state that the relationship that occurred between the funding and my school district and the University of Minnesota actually created a lot of a supportive environment, and also created a sense of urgency and a community inside of my building and inside of the district that want to be to be successful. In a sense, the collaboration and partnership kind of held everybody to a higher standard, like in my building, in my district, and with the University of Minnesota, since there were, and the funding and all the contributors to the funding, we all felt a higher standard and higher need to allow this pathway for me, a man of color, to become a teacher of color. I wanted to be a teacher because I wanted to be a positive light and positive perspective in education that would reflect the growing population of students of color, which has literally exploded in the past 15 years. The population just keeps getting bigger. And then in some cases, I've been in buildings where we've lost teachers of color or staff of color for one reason or another. And I wanted to connect to all my students that were eager to learn and coexist with the global majority. And as many of our students and many of my coworkers have no idea that the global majority are people of color. I only had one teacher of color in my personal life when I was an elementary school student. To this day, I never have forgotten that teacher of color, and she inspired me. And she always remember feeling like I had somebody who was on my side as a fifth grader when I felt that the whole world was against me. I saw this quote last night and it said, proximity creates and inspires the idea of possibility. So if kids can see teachers of color, that in itself is going to inspire them. Just being in proximity of a teacher of color, they're going to be inspired to believe in themselves and be great, and to know that this man or this woman went to college and graduated, this man or this woman is successful, that is me. And my building has also responded to my presence. All of my coworkers have responded to the idea of social justice because I'm a real person. I'm here working with them. I'm breathing with them. I'm in their face. We're building students to become better humans. So just my proximity to all my white teachers have created the sense of urgency and the dream of social justice. And me being a teacher of color, with proximity to all my students, and especially my students of color, but also all of my white students and European descended students, it's created brave voices that want to talk about and discuss topics that deal with social justice and academic justice, meaning that students of color feel comfortable using their own heritage in their academics, using their own personal lives as examples, because they know that there are two teachers of color in my building that they can reflect with and feel proud that they can share what they have and not feel outcasted in a sense to the white majority. And more importantly, feel safe doing it. And, you know, that's my piece. And I thank you all for listening to me. And I thank you for your attention very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Gibbs, and good luck on completing your program. Last is from this, for this part of the agenda, is Men Yang, a teacher at Champlain Park High School. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Dabney, Chair Chamberlain, and conferees. My name is Meng Yang, and I teach English language arts and also the AVID program to high schoolers at Champlain Park High School in the Anoka Hennepin School District, where I'm the coordinator as well of the AVID program. Not only do I teach it, I coordinate the program. And I'm trying to stay young, but I'm going to be concluding my 12th year already in teaching, so trying really hard. And I'm actually one of the leaders of a Teachers of Color Affinity Group in my district. I'm here today during what is actually my prep period, but kind of like what my colleagues have been talking about before, my son was called in today because he was around someone who had COVID. So now I had to rush throughout the school day to get everything working again. And he's now home in his room trying to work on stuff online. But it would have been my prep period around this time. But I felt that it was important enough to be here because we are talking about the investments in expanding the types of the Grow Your Own programs and for teacher mentorship and retention grants that focus on supporting teachers of color. 51% of the nearly 3,000 students in my school, Champlain Park, are students of color, and it is growing. But I'm among American, and I'm just one of 10 teachers of color at my school. And there are 3,000 students, almost 200 teachers. 7-8 years ago, I joined several teachers of color at various schools in my district to form the Anoka Hennepin Teachers of Color Coalition. And we affectionately call it ATOC. ATOC was formed to provide space for teachers of color to meet, to network, find confidence, and validate our abilities as teachers in our district. Our affinity space evolved into a group of educators that voiced our concerns for recruiting and retaining teachers of color. We have created networks with other affinity groups in the Twin Cities. We presented at national conferences across the United States. We created a subcommittee within our own union, and we've created education of color seminars, one that's housed at Augsburg University. So teachers of color, they face a lot of unique challenges every day. Not only are we treated with confusion and uncertainty by a lot of our white colleagues and administrators, we also run into problems teaching Eurocentric curriculum, as my colleague, Mr. Gibbs, talked about. We also have difficulty finding text and lessons that center diverse groups of people. We have difficulty creating relationships with all students, white students and students of color, and sharing spaces with our colleagues. Professional development in our schools are often not meant for educators of color and often force us to relive our traumas and also tokenize us to explain things. Through ATOC, however, we've been able to create tremendous relationships with new teachers that are just beginning to embark on this career. We've been able to do this by creating strong relationships with our area post-secondary institutions, by creating an organic network of educators across districts and cities. We've been able to have a voice at decision-making tables, both at district levels and at the administrative building level. So currently, I do co-teach an educators of color seminar class at Augsburg University. Most educators of color take the course to learn how to navigate their workspaces and to unpack our experiences as educators of color. We have veteran teachers that have come back to take the course as well. We connect with schools across our area and advocate for our teachers. We read academic articles, learn about social justice in education, and create and share strategies on how to teach our students as teachers of color. Currently, ATOC and the Educators of Color Seminar has allowed educators like myself to connect to districts that may not have as much resources as larger school districts. I've been able to connect and work with educators of color from the Hopkins School District. And I know we have representatives from Hopkins in this meet today. Together with the teachers, we have been able to join other affinity groups and join in the work and create more resources and begin our own programming to help those students in that area. So I urge you to dramatically increase funding for Grow Your Own programs to support the rich diversity in so many communities throughout the state, and teacher mentorship and retention grant programs, along with all the other investments and policies from the Increased Teachers of Color Act needed to increase the recruitment, preparation, and retention of teachers of color. So I thank you today for giving me this time to talk to you all.
Thank you, Mr. Yang. Appreciate particularly the challenges that popped up in your day that you took time to speak with us. Thank you for that. Members, we're now going to pivot to the Sané Foundation. Mr. Chair, we've appreciated the Sané Foundation was funded, if I remember correctly, in 2017, but we've appreciated the variety of services they provide. Being an avenue for teachers of color is a part of that. They play an interesting role in many of their young, I believe they're Promise Fellows, but AmeriCorps volunteers, regardless of the exact status, find that working with youth is a place they want to stay and then move on into education. And they provide a number of services in the communities that they work in. So again, it's about teachers of color, but it's about providing holistic services so that students of color find an educational experience that is meaningful and rich and affirming for them so that they can then succeed. With that, Mr. Sané, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. First, I want to start by thank you, Chair Javini, and thank all the authors on our bill together and all of you for your public service. We've built this program by listening to the public, and we'd like to think that we started to listen to each other years ago. We've been mentoring kids for 10 years now. We know that mentoring is the greatest proactive, the greatest protector against youth depression in our schools. And so we know it works. And so we built a model around supporting our students. But that model quickly grew to supporting our teachers, supporting our classrooms and school climate. Our model is we put 3 to 4 mentors in a public school and they start to work with the youth in the school. 75% of our staff over the last 8 years have been from communities of color. So we think we can retain, but really, as you'll hear about later, we get people to work in schools and we change the trajectory of what they want to do. Some may become teachers and some may become administrators. You know, we did a great job and the schools were excited about our staff, but the schools started to hire our staff. So 4 years ago, we started to investigate working with different universities to design career pathways. So we developed a teacher of color pathway. As you heard before of going to work and doing this and getting money and all the challenges, we did not want to lower the bar, but we wanted to lower some of the challenges. So we developed a blended program where you'll hear from a teacher today that's been in our program, how hard it is to go to school full-time in the summer, but we support them through a cohort and they don't have to go to school outside of work time. It is one blended program. It is very efficient. We know at times right now, money is tight and we have to make decisions. We hope as an organization that you trust our ability to look ahead as we've designed this program to support students, school climate, as well as classrooms. We also are very good at being culturally relevant and responsive and had other contracts, including American Indian Education contract. So we know that the methodology works and we have just expanded that methodology, not only from students, but to mentors and to teachers. And even some of the schools are now asking us to help train and model some of the things we do, because we invest in a lot of professional development of our teachers and our staff, because we want them to understand their students and we want them to be successful. You've heard this from me before, but we have a lot of speakers today, so I'm going to pass it on, and they will be able to tell you their story. And I think what you'll hear is how somebody can move from a bank to want to be a school administrator, how someone can be a videographer but work in school and decide that he'll become a teacher. You'll hear from students that were failing and didn't have connections after the COVID, but now are getting A's. So with that, I would thank you, Chair, and I would turn it back over to you to introduce our speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Sonne. Appreciate that. Making a return appearance before the conference committee, Superintendent Christine Tucci-Osorio from the North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School District. Superintendent, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record. Proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Devney, and to the members of the group. I know you're going to be hearing today from a few different people, and I've spoken to a number of you before on behalf of the Sonne Foundation, but a couple things I want to just highlight briefly. It is so important to talk about return on investment when we think about what are the programs that work and what are the programs that that really warrant some really positive and thoughtful investment, and this is one of those programs. We started working with the Sonne Foundation and been really impressed with our Dreamline coaches. Like Tony mentioned, there's an incredible draw for people of color to come and work in our programs and in our schools. And I've said before that leadership really matters. And Tony has a charisma that is amazing, and people are drawn to and want to be part of his team. And there's something that's so important about feeling like you are part of something greater than yourself. And that's something that he does for his Dreamline coaches and for schools that work with the program. We feel a true partnership. And we, like he said, often want to try to hire those folks into our schools, and they very much support us when we do, as long as we can try to help continue on that path of getting our young mentors of color into the teaching profession is an amazing, amazing thing to be doing right now. So that return on investment is incredible. The enthusiasm and energy and the feeling of being part of something greater than they are. So I just encourage you to take a look at the data that's being brought by the Sonne Foundation and the incredible opportunity that's being provided and quite frankly, incredible mentorship of our mentors by Tony and his team and our connections with each other as well. So I'm not going to take a lot of time because I want to have you hear from those who are directly connected in their experiences, but I'll just say you're always welcome to call me individually if you want to hear more about the impact. I know we don't have a lot of time to get into that today, but we have had some previous testimony on that before, but incredible return on investment for recruiting young leaders of color into our schools.
Thank you very much, Superintendent. Next on my agenda is Abdallah Ba, Dreamline coach from North St. Paul High School. Abdallah, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Abdallah Ba. Thank you for having me. And I just want to thank everybody for allowing me to be a part of this testimony. And I want to personally thank Tony as well for allowing me to be a part of the Dreamline program and the Sonne Foundation. For me, I would say, having grown up knowing Tony and also being around people who have been very impactful and inspiring in my life, I've always wanted to be able to bring back that same impact in other people's lives. And over the past summer, last year, I was working in the finance sector and kind of really didn't know where I wanted to go with in terms of how I wanted to do things. And I had a pretty good idea of what I wanted to do, just didn't know how to go towards doing that and wanted to make that change. So being able to be a part of the Dreamline program has been very eye-opening for me. And so I'm currently a mentor and a coordinator at the North St. Paul High School, and it's been a very great experience for me. It's helped me grow in confidence, in my confidence and knowing what I wanted to do and helping me solidify and wanting to make an impact and change going forward. With that, I've had the opportunity to work with great students and seeing how we can make, seeing how we can change their trajectory and their lives. It's been wonderful to see students coming up to me and being able to ask me questions on certain things that I know about and having gone through some of those similar experiences as well growing up. With that, the being a part of the Dreamline program honestly has been very helpful for me in terms of knowing that I want to solidify me and wanting to work with youth going forward and wanting to work in the education sector as well. And just having the training and also being able to connect with students and being able to advocate for them, just being in the space and opportunity has been just wonderful. And for me, I knew that I wanted to work with youth. I just, like I said, I didn't know how to go about it. And being in this space has been able to, I've had the opportunity to start and create, wanting to create my own programs. And but being the focus, being around mentorship, and playing soccer and being able to educate them as well. With that, I recently came across opportunities where to continue working or going towards working in the finance sector or being in more of a office setting type of thing. And I just come to realize that that's not who I want to be in. That's not where I want to go. I want to make real change. I want to be impact. I want to be in the front and center of making those impacts. And with that, it's happened. I had the opportunity to sit down and think, and being able to learn from Tony as well. Those conversations has been really meaningful for me because it's allowed me to want to think and take it further in terms of wanting to get a higher education and wanting to work in admin and to be able to set up the same similar spaces to be able to make those changes for those students. So I am very grateful to be a part of the Dreamline program and the SANA Foundation to have that opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ba. I appreciate your taking the time to join us today. Next on my list is Matthew, and I'm going to say Harvey. Mr. Harvey, welcome to the
Jarvie.
It is Jarvie. Yeah. My apologies. Mr. Jarvie, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Matthew James Jarvie. I'm a Dreamline coach here with the SANA Foundation located over at Humboldt High School. I'm here with two of my star pupils, young leaders in the making, Kenise James and Alexis Vasquez. So this is my first time, first year as a Dreamline coach working with SANA. I'm going to try and keep this brief because we got to get these students back to class. But this work has been very important to me because when I was a youth, when I was their age, the people who helped me most were those teachers and paras who connected with me on a personal level, made me feel seen and valued, and still had my success in mind. So what have I seen in the growth of my students? The growth that I've seen from my students have gone from failing everything to passing every class with A's. I've seen some of my students go from being shy and reserved to being outspoken leaders and expressing their true selves. I support the school by lightening the load for teachers who have to give their attention to a classroom full of students. I can help students who are having trouble understanding the work, or who may be dealing with issues outside of school which are preventing them from, you know, being able to focus in their classroom. So the SANA room where we're at right now is kind of a safe space in the school where students can come and kind of regroup themselves before they got to go to class and, you know, do the left brain work. So why this work is important? I believe this work is important because I've had the opportunity to build safe space here in this room and building trust amongst the students by getting to know them and helping them with their schoolwork. This lays a solid foundation for learning and growth to happen. And the SANA Foundation provides Dreamline coaches and all of our team and staff with a lot of really amazing training, which helps us deepen our work in connecting with students. And me personally, as a white male, I'm a minority amongst the crew. And I think the trainings that we get have helped me deepen my work in being able to work in a school that is majority people of color students, Black and Brown students from all different backgrounds. And the trainings have really helped me and have helped a lot of our coaches, just be better people showing up to do this job. So with that, I'll stop talking and I'm going to pass it to who's going first. Kanis is going to go first and I'm going to back away and let Kanis share her piece.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jarvie. Kanis, welcome to the committee. You've maybe heard this before. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Kanis James, and working with Matt, he has helped students with,
Kanis, before the pandemic, what was school like for you?
Working in school, it was a good thing because I'm a visual learner and I like to learn in person and being with classmates and seeing my teachers so I can get that support that I need. And I can ask them in person instead of, sending an email and stuff. And it's easier to contact my teachers if I need help. During the quarantine, everything kind of, dropped because everybody's so used to being in school. So being out of school, it was completely different. And learning through a screen for me is very hard because I get distracted easily and I'm a procrastinator. So it was kind of hard for me to keep on top of my work and stuff. Coming back, it was kind of, rocky at first because we were so used to being out of school. Now we have to go back and stuff. But being in school, it helped me get my grades back up. And it was kind of hard to get right back on track at first. But now I am on track and, knowing where I need to be so I could finish out the school year strong.
Okay. Thank you very much. I do hope you finish this off the school year strong, Ms. James.
I still got a couple questions for her.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Jarvie.
That's okay. So how are your grades working with
me? How are they improved? Working with Matt, I have always been a straight A student, but during quarantine, that kind of dropped because, just lacking of turning in work and stuff. I did fail a class, and I never have before, but coming back and working with Matt, he did take his time to, see what we needed to be done, and he helped us work through our assignments and to turn them in just so we could get back to where we needed to be. Working with Matt, he would just ask us questions and, he would show us breathing techniques. He does what his what he does, and he would show them to us, and we would learn how to do it, and that kind of helped us students in his classroom open up and connect more, and we would discuss what would be going on outside of school, and that kind of helped us get comfortable too, so we could build up from there.
All right, next up is Alexis Vasquez. I'm going to ask you the same question.
So, Ms. Vasquez, as you've seen, please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Alexis Vasquez, and question?
So, what was school like for you?
before the pandemic, it was a lot easier for me to do work because I had a lot more staff and a lot more teachers around me to help me with my work. So, during quarantine, it was really hard because I didn't have that same support from my teachers and other staff because we were all through virtual. So they tended to be busy or they tended to just not have any time for a lot of their students. It was hard because I was failing and I didn't know what we were doing at all. So when we went to go do work, I didn't know what to do. My grades were failing, and I went from a failing student to a straight A student. Yes, you did. Matt had helped me pick up my grades by being there and asking me if I needed help and knowing that if I had something going on, he would still try to help me with it and go through it with me. He helped me when I was stressed or overwhelmed so that it was better for me to build up from there. So my grades improved from that.
I'm super proud of these young folks, and they make my job a delight to come back to work with them every day. And thank you, and I'm going to pass it on to the chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Jarvie. Thank you. excuse me. Thank you, Ms. Vasquez, for joining us. Thank you also to Ms. James. Members, I want to give members a kind of an interim check-in here. We've had two out of our three presenters present. I want to know if there are any questions or comments from members. Seeing none. Oh, Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the presenters, great job. Totally enthusiastic and supportive of the programs. I wanted to just ask Tony or any of the panelists to comment a bit further about parent involvement or brothers or sisters of the students as to the influence that they may have on the student and how that is a part of the successful formula.
Mr. Sane, do you want to take that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Wieger, Senator Wieger. As the program has grown over the years, we've done high parent engagement to low to now reprioritizing it. In communities that we go in, we have to point out sometimes the people close to us aren't giving us the support we need because of other challenges in our life. So what we do as an organization is try to contact the other family members and get them introduced. And we try to call with positive news so that the parents hear great things about their kids and they can connect with somebody that they have a cultural understanding with. So it makes the communication a lot easier when we're talking to parents about really what's going on in the lives of their kids. It's not easy because our staff works the full day and then sometimes they make calls at night. But we're also starting to do what we call world cafes, where we're inviting parents just to come out in the community and talk about what it's like at home. So then we can do our homework on the environment of the students. And when that happens, the parents then start actively being more engaged in their child's education.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you very much, Tony. And again, I hope we can do whatever we can to advance all of these very worthwhile programs. I say that too as a graduate of North High. And Tony, you might be interested. I was on its very first soccer team.
Nice to hear.
Any other questions or sports reports from members? Seeing none, let's pivot to Black Men Teach.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I know that we're in the interest of time, but we have the last presenter that's actually went through the Pathway Program and is now a teacher at Harding High School.
My apologies.
And we skipped the one, and then I just have a 30-second wrap-up.
All right. That's just fine. If they would please introduce themselves for the record and then proceed with their testimony, they're more than welcome to the committee. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
I can, just fine.
Mm-hmm. All right. So my name is Emmanuel Ifelaja, most here at Harding High School would know me as Bio. I met Tony through doing like videography and photography stuff. And then I was in a place where I was really trying to figure out what my next step was. And before that, I had worked with youth in Minneapolis. I used to run a youth development program there in Little Earth. And
Amy Oliver, principal at Monroe Elementary. Your fourth grade student is being...
Should I go again?
Please proceed. I don't know what happened there, but keep going.
It's okay.
Thank you.
But basically, getting introduced to Tony, I was able to join on to the Sony Foundation team and become a Dreamline coach at Harding High School. Previously being a mentor or a Dreamline coach there, back for the past, 2 years now, now, after graduating from the program, I am actually teaching ninth grade. My class specifically is content acceleration. So it's a reading program mixed in with math. And it's a support class. And it was through my work at the Sony Foundation that helped me gain the, at least part of the experience to further develop my opportunity to work with students and my capabilities to work with students and just my overall education, not only from text from my classes, but also the on-hand experience of actually being with students throughout the day and also after school. And I really think that having the opportunity to have more mentorship within Harding, like I did, would be beneficial not only for students, but also for teachers alike. I think it's a very powerful thing for not only my minority students, but also my white colleagues to be able to experience diversity. I think it does a lot for all of us. I also think that just for students to be able to see my evolution, going from their youth worker mentor to actually finishing a program, a college program, and then now graduating, and being their teacher all in the same school. Some of my same students have been here for these 3 years and have now seen me finish. And I don't know, I was beyond being proud of myself. It was so nice to have my students come up and be so happy to see me succeed. So I think that's the highlight to me of being a part of the Sony Foundation. And I think the benefit in having this program and more programs like this to be a pipeline to get educators from a huge diverse background, not just Black, but all these different diverse backgrounds that we have here in the US. I think it's very, very important. And I think it's a goal that can be met with all of us coming together and doing this. So, That's the majority of what I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for joining us and congratulations on setting goals and following through on your path and achieving. That's wonderful. Appreciate you sharing the story. Mr. Sani, other testifiers or closing comments? I'm not quite sure where we're at.
Yep. Just either is fine. Comments, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
So thank you everybody for listening. I think what you can see is children and students are students. And as you saw someone, sometimes we're just there to advocate so you can hear their voice. Whether kids get nervous, they don't know how to act, they don't know how to behave, but a mentor can ask them, find out what they wanna do, support them and watch them flourish. I think being able to get young people of color inside of our schools, have students watch them do the work, right? I was going to school full-time while working full-time, and students saw him do this. So he was backing up everything he was teaching them, and that's important. important that the next generation understand that there is gold at the end of that road, but you have to do the work. And giving people opportunities is really important. So we want to be efficient, but we think this program can grow. You've seen us, you know, develop opportunities, take Fs to As, superintendents. And lastly, it's bipartisan. Senator Chamberlain and the rest of the senators support it. The House supports it. It's something that we can truly agree upon. And I hope this is a situation when it's okay to agree that kids come first, equity comes first, and sense comes first. So thank you for your support, everybody. And we hope that we're able to grow this program into other districts in the future.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sane. And thank you to all the testifiers that you brought to the committee today. Much appreciated. Members, any questions before we perhaps take our break? The tradition on this conference committee has been to take five. So why don't today we make that seven and come back at 2:15 at this point. And then we'll hear from Black Men Teach and move on to some of the discussion of some proposals that were surfaced on Friday and perhaps others. Thank you. We'll see you at 2:15. Next on our agenda, as indicated, is testimony from Black Men Teach. First on the agenda is Kyrie Lewis.
Hey, how are you guys?
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Lewis. Sorry.
Good afternoon.
Looking to find you on the Zoom screen. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for taking time out of your day to join us. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you guys so much for having me. My name is Kyrie Lewis. I graduated from Champlain Park High School. I am now a junior and an elementary education major at Augsburg University. And I also work in Anoka Hennepin at Monroe Elementary as a paraeducator. The reason why I decided that I wanted to go into education, really, I feel like I repeat this so often, but it's because it's my favorite quote and something that I live by. But when elders begin to plant trees whose shade they will never sit in, society will grow great. So I am a person that believes in order for society to be great, we have to do things for others that we won't necessarily reap the benefits of, right? And I truly am passionate about working with kids. I'm a big brother, and I also discovered this passion through my sports because I was a three-try athlete. I wrestled, I played football, and I did track. When I was doing these youth camps for wrestling and football, I really enjoyed it. But I was always steering away from education because in education, all I ever heard about it was teachers don't get paid a lot. The pay is not good. And on top of that, I didn't see many teachers that looked like me. So growing up, I never looked at my white woman teacher and thought to myself, that's going to be me one day. And I'm also a first generation college student and someone who grew up in poverty. So with that in consideration, when I first got into college, when I first graduated high school, that's a big deal. And getting into college, that was also a big deal. And all I'm hearing from family and loved ones is, oh, we're so proud of you. You're going to get a degree and you're going to make a bunch of money, right? So the last thing I considered actually was education. But then I started working at a daycare. And my first day working at that daycare, I knew that that's where I belong. I want to be working with kids. And I will not be content with anything I do unless I think that it is making an impact. And I think that's the best way for me to do it. But with education, it almost seems like a luxury to be able to teach, because when you're someone like me who comes from poverty and you're a first generation college student and you have all this pressure to succeed and take care of your family, that doesn't seem like the most logical career option. But when I have support from an organization like Black Men Teach, not only does it have financial benefits that take that pressure off my shoulders, but when I see other fellows, and I have coworkers that work at my school with me, when I see them working with their students and I hear the way the students talk about them and the way they talk about their students, it really validates my decision to go into education. And I didn't know, I knew there were not a lot of Black male teachers, but I didn't know all the numbers. And when I joined Black Men Teach for the first time, I heard, you know, Minnesota is one of the best states for education, but we also have the biggest achievement gap. And I'm like, what? That does not make any sense at all to me. And then I heard Black men are not 1%, but half of 1% of the educators in Minnesota. And when we start talking about all the statistics and the impact that a Black man can have in a classroom, I realize how important this job is. And that motivates me even more to be the best that I can be, because I know that there's going to be students like myself that will not get by with a mediocre teacher, that need better than a mediocre teacher. So Black Men Teach is huge for me when I think about support. And it's way more than just financial. It's, you know, being able to see people that look like me doing what I'm doing, being able to talk to them, being able to ask them questions. Because that's another thing that I considered when I did decide that I wanted to be an education major is, what if I go into this career and I get there and I don't fit in? And I've never worried about what people have thought about me before. But when I think about my career, I'm like, I'm spending all this money to go to college, and it's something that I will do for the rest of my life. I want to be comfortable. Now I'm learning, I probably won't always be comfortable, and that's okay. You know, you have to get used with being uncomfortable. But I'm working towards what our education, what I envision, and what our education system can be, not what it is. And Black Men Teach definitely has been help. Black Men Teach has definitely been helping and supporting me in doing so. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. We appreciate that. Next on the list is Marcus Flynn. Mr. Flynn, welcome to the committee. Thank you for joining us today. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Marcus Flynn. Chair Dabney, Chair Chamberlain, committee members, thank you all for having us and hearing out from us a little bit. And so based on earlier testimonies, I think it's clear to say, as a community, we understand the importance of increasing the numbers of teachers of color. As Kyrie mentioned, the data is compelling. The personal narratives and anecdotes are also compelling. And I think one thing that was elucidated earlier that's not often thought of and looked in these conversations is how it can actually be psychologically damaging to not have that representation in schools. Representative Hassan mentioned the story of a young student who wanted to change their skin color. Sorry, it's dismissal at my school.
That's okay. Please continue, Mr. Flynn.
And earlier, another testifier talked about how her own daughter wanted Caucasian hair. And these stories aren't that uncommon, because in my very first year teaching, I had a student tell me how they hated looking in the mirror because they did not like the color of their skin. And so the lack of representation truly has these deep, pervasive consequences that having representation helps mitigate. What Black Men Teach offers is a potential solution to this problem that's really plagued our community for decades. We're trying to answer the question, what happens if you take a laser-focused approach to supporting one of the most underrepresented groups in our state? Again, as Kyrie Lewis mentioned, a conservative estimate leaves you with only half of 1% of the teachers in the state of Minnesota being Black men. Our goal is to have 20% of the teachers in our 8 partner schools be Black men in the next 5 years. So what we've done to accomplish that goal is create a coalition of stakeholders that includes K-5 schools, high schools, community-based organization, and teacher training programs, all with the intention of addressing each of the unique barriers to entry that Black men face. Black Men Teach does not only provide service, we orchestrate all of the existing supports that we know move the needle, right? Things such as concurrent enrollment, connections to scholarships, paid student teaching opportunities, and connections to school with a welcoming culture and comprehensive induction process. Our work is grounded in the individualized support that we provide men from the beginning of their journey through the first few years in the classroom. And when we and our community partners prove that this model is successful, we'll be able to scale this and replicate it at a much larger magnitude and really start to chip away at that problem of equitable representation of teachers that, again, has plagued us for years. So thank you. Chair and committee members for hearing me.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Appreciate your taking the time today. Next on my list is Superintendent Mary Peary Reed from the, I better get this right, Hopkins School District. Welcome back to the committee, Superintendent. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Chair Dabney and Chair Chamberlain, members of the committee. My name is Rhoda Marie Peary Reed, and I'm superintendent in Hopkins, but I also serve as the chair of Black Men Teach Board of Directors. And fun fact, I also was the principal at Champlain Park High School a few years ago, so it's really nice to hear from former graduates like Kyrie Lewis. Thank you, members of the committee, also to each of you for your leadership and service during this very difficult year. We appreciate you, and we also appreciate this opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. So I'm here, like many others, on behalf of our K-12 students in Minnesota who want to see themselves reflected in their teachers. I also speak on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, because as superintendents, not only are we acutely aware that Black boys are some of the least served educationally in our system, we also believe that all students, including white students, benefit when they have teachers who represent the rich and diverse population that exists across cities and counties in Minnesota. As Mr. Flynn shared with you earlier, our mission at Black Men Teach is very simple. It is to noticeably increase the number of Black male educators in elementary classrooms. And I've heard Mr. Flynn say a number of times, if you know a Black male teacher in Minnesota, you know a unicorn, because they don't exist. I've been the chair of Black Men Teach since its inception about 3 years ago. Black Men Teach was created because as a state, we have failed to move the needle on increasing teachers of color. And this failure of ours has a specific and detrimental impact on students and schools. In Minnesota, as you know, we serve roughly 460,000 elementary students, with a growing number who are non-white, yet adults of color make up fewer than 5% of teachers. And how this translates to my district in Hopkins is that while almost 50% of our students in Hopkins Public Schools are non-white, our elementary teachers across six schools are 90% white, 80% women, with just two individuals being Black and male. I hope you can see so far that at Black Men Teach, we have a lot of passion. And what's even better is we have a solid plan informed by clear beliefs. Our core belief is that all students in Minnesota's K-12 system deserve to be successful. And we believe that when we fail our students, we're not only failing young people and their families, we are failing society and our state's economy. So at Black Men Teach, our theory of change is that when we build a specific pipeline that places, retains, and supports Black male teachers in elementary classrooms, then we will, number one, change the demographic makeup of Minnesota's elementary teachers, two, positively and permanently impact the trajectories of children across all racial backgrounds, and three, create opportunities for Black male educators to add tremendous value to the public education sector. At Black Men Teach, we are recruiting and cultivating Black males into the teaching profession, and as Mr. Flynn said, over the next 5 years, we want to add 4 to 6 Black male teachers to each of 8 elementary partner schools in the metropolitan area. This will total between 30 and 50 Black male teachers that will be placed and supported in 5 years. Two of our partner schools are here in Hopkins, Eisenhower Elementary and Tanglin Elementary. And you'll hear in just a minute from Eisenhower Elementary's principal, Principal Ness, who is absolutely amazing. And you might think that a goal of adding 30 to 50 Black male teachers to the Minnesota teaching population in the next 5 years is audacious. It is, and it is achievable. It is completely achievable because at Black Men Teach, we have built a collective impact strategy that requires districts, teacher preparation programs, and community organizations to work together on each of the specific elements of the Black male teacher pipeline: recruitment, placement, retention, with tailored support for each
Black Men Teach fellow during his entire journey. And so, members of the committee, by investing in Black Men Teach, you are supporting and investing in a specific need. And yes, we really do need all kinds of teachers of color. And the data and research clearly demonstrate that Black male educators are almost absent from the profession. Cultivating Black males to be elementary educators and providing personalized support to them directly within their specific schools is our secret sauce at Black Men Teach. And your financial investment will help us build a simplified pipeline strategy that will put your money to immediate use in a laser-focused way that we can then replicate and scale, as Mr. Flynn mentioned. So while our current partner sites are in the metropolitan area, our mission is to build a pipeline process that can be replicated and scaled across the entire state. And finally, not only is our new executive director, Marcus Flynn, a passionate change agent who is also an elementary teacher and will ensure the success of Black Men Teach, we are also governed by a really unique and devoted board that is committed to remaining or maintaining a 50% Black membership. So our vice chair and treasurer is a senior VP at Bank of America. We also have Ginny Arthur, president of Metro State University, Peter Hutchinson, a former superintendent of Minneapolis schools, Terry Bonoff, many of you know her, former Minnesota legislator, Michael Gore, head of Catholic Charities, Josh Crossan from Ed Allies, and other really committed individuals. So that's who we are and what we intend to do. And thank you so much for your commitment to improving and hopefully transforming elementary classrooms and learning experiences for Minnesota's students. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Superintendent. Next on my list is Kate Lundquist. Ms. Lundquist, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Thank you for your patience today and proceed with your testimony.
No problem. It is an honor to be here. My name is Kate Lundquist. I live in Brooklyn Park. We just moved here last fall. I am a former teacher. I have my K through 8 teaching license. However, I'm not in practice right now. I am the mother of 6 children, and that is what brings me here today. 4 of my children are biological, and 2 were adopted from the country of Haiti. Now, previous to September 2020, we spent probably, I'm guessing, 13, 14 years living in northern Minnesota. I was born and raised in Duluth, very white back in the 80s, and probably still pretty predominantly white now. But then, I cannot believe this, but we moved even further north, up to the Canadian border in Roseau County, which is 95% white. At least. So adopting 2 sons with very dark skin, they sure stuck out, but I was really hopeful that love would be enough. After the murder of George Floyd last summer, I became increasingly curious about the realities of what was happening in our state, in our society, in our cultures, and I took 4 of my children, loaded them up, and we traveled to the Minneapolis area to see for ourselves what was going on. And what I noticed about my 2 Black sons, particularly my oldest, who was 11 at the time, I took him to spaces that were predominantly Black. And after living so much of his childhood in Roseau County, where he was one of the only people of color. You know how mothers and fathers, we know our kids so well, we can tell when they're a little bit off, we can tell when they have a temperature maybe, or when something's bugging them. I'm telling you, I saw something different in my son when he was in spaces where there was Black leadership, Black community, business owners, leaders. I saw my son stand a little taller. I saw him gain confidence. And I saw my white kids gain compassion and empathy and broaden their understanding of the world. And I went home and we made plans to move. Our house went on the market and we were here by September. When I looked for a place to live, we are flexible in our careers, fairly flexible. I wanted the most diverse place we could be. We looked from going to maybe one of the whitest counties in Minnesota. I wanted the extreme opposite. I was told Brooklyn Center or Brooklyn Park would probably be my best bet. So I combed through. I mean, that's how powerful our experience was coming to Minneapolis last summer and what it did for my kids. So we used school demographics. I was excited to meet Kyrie on this call because he is at the school where my kids go to elementary, Monroe, here in Brooklyn Park. I did not want to be part of white majority culture anymore. We really wanted to diversify. And I can't tell you how excited we were. Again, my oldest son, Nelson, who's in fifth grade, from only having white female students to randomly, I did not ask for it, I did not request, but he was assigned to Mr. Thetis White, fifth grade teacher, who you hopefully all have seen the video of him being the recipient of that enormous gift from on behalf of Black Men Teach, General Mills, Box Tops for Education. And I didn't even know money was attached to it. I just thought we were making him a nice video and giving him accolades. And I knew he would cry at that, let alone the money. But seeing him honored in such a way and having Mr. White as a teacher, having my kids get to have a Black man as a leader, we are talking a lot about what that does for our students of color. But we also need to be considering what this will do for all students, all students. Can you imagine not only the confidence in our students of color, but our white European descent students having an inch more understanding and respect, what that could do in our law enforcement, in our healthcare, in our business practices. For my kids to have a mirror, a racial mirror in the classroom, and then also for my white students to have people of color to look up to and admire and respect and to learn from. You guys, we can't lose here. So I'm just here as a parent today to say thank you for having this conversation. And as a white mom, I can't tell you how excited I am to have this be put into place. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lundquist, excuse me. Powerful story. Appreciate your taking the time to share it with us today. Next on, and I believe last, although I've been wrong before, on my list is Melissa Ness, who rumor has it is a school principal. Ms. Ness, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Dabney and Chair Chamberlain and committee. My name is Melissa Ness, and I am the principal at Eisenhower Elementary in Hopkins, Minnesota. And we currently host two interns from the Black Man Teach program. We host a young man named Masood. He is in one of our fourth grade classrooms, and we also host a young man named Xavier who is interning in our second grade outdoor immersion program. Masood is actually also a former student, which as you can imagine makes a real tangible local and immediate impact on our school. The concept that I really want to share today that has been so important and impactful about Black Men Teach is the concept of representation. And representation matters. It matters for our entire school community, our scholars, our staff, and our families. Our staff members know that we partner with Black Men Teach, and that partnership shows our staff that we value recruiting and retaining teachers of color. This visible action allows us to take take and make a powerful statement to our staff about what we believe, what we value, and how important it is for us to ensure that our interns feel welcome in our school. We know that entering the profession as a teacher of color can feel isolating, and teachers of color can experience microaggressions and other forms of racism. When there is an organization like Black Men Teach, there is mentorship. There is a place in the community beyond just the school, like an affinity group, where people can come together and mentor each other and express and explore all of their experiences in our school, which is critically important. Representation also matters for our students. When I think about the idea of representation, I like to discuss the idea of windows and mirrors as a metaphor. Our students, who are a racially diverse group of students, need to see themselves in their teachers, in the curriculum, and in perspectives, different perspectives as mirrors. It validates us, it makes us feel seen and heard. When our interns are a part of our classrooms, our Black students have a role model who looks like them and who may have had similar experiences as they have, who they can relate to in a different way than they can relate to their white teachers. The flip side to windows and mirrors, the other part is the windows. We also need to see outside. We need to see people, curriculum, and perspectives from cultures that are not our own as windows. And that is what our Black Men Teach interns provide to our white students or other cultural groups that are not Black. This idea really of representation is how we grow as an organization and a country. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ness. Members, questions for the testifiers for Black Men Teach?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, just a brief comment in 30 seconds. When we first came across some testimony in this last session, Dr. Mira Perry Reed. It's an amazing organization. So I'm glad they're here. I'm glad we could hear from them again. So thank you very much for the work and getting out there and finding alternative ways and getting it done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any other questions or comments from conference committee members? Seeing none, thank you to the testifiers from Black Men Teach. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Chair, are you open to adopting the proposed set of provisions that we raised on Friday, the list from May 7th, with a timestamp of 12:48 p.m.?
Yes, we are open. I do have a couple of questions, Mr. Chair.
All right. Please proceed with your questions, Mr. Chair.
So Senate Article 2, Section 9, and your Article 2, Section 17, has to do with some eligibility for AP placement issues. So I just had two quick things. You had two differences in the language. One was, maybe someone can help us understand this piece. The first one was, I believe your line 39.12, it talks about you strike 150 and reduce it to 75,000. So you cut in half the amount of grants per district or charter school. Just trying to understand the reasoning for that.
Certainly. Mr. Strom, is that a question best for you? Who'd best respond to the chair's question?
Mr. Chair, members, that's fine. Ms. Perra may want to comment as well. I believe the issue was some of the advocates were hoping that there would be more of those grants made rather than a larger amount.
And so I believe that's where on the House side, the 75,000 came from. Ms. Pera may want to correct my memory on that.
Ms. Pera, can you help us with this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think Mr. Strong is correct. It's about stretching, might maybe stretching the money out a little bit more by having it a lower cap.
Thank you, Ms. Pera. Chair Chamberlain?
Yeah, thank you. That's kind of what we thought. I just want to kind of explore a little bit more. The other one, I guess, the other change was, difference was up actually on your line 38.8, it starts, priority for advanced placement grants must be given to grantees who add or expand offerings of advanced placement in computer science principles. Just again, you know, some broader understanding for that piece.
Mr. Chair, I do know that the College Board's Advanced Placement Computer Science Principles course is one of the fastest growing opportunities across the country. They're seeing large numbers of schools and students taking that up. I do know this is a few years old, so always, of course, let staff correct me, but as of 2 or 3 years ago, there were no students in the northern part of the state who took the test associated with that. There seemed to be a significant geographic inequity or inequality in opportunity there. And so I think part of that is wanting to make sure that students across the state get access to that. But again, perhaps Ms. Pera would be a better person to answer that.
Mr. Chair, members, unfortunately, I don't think I have any data or recent information on that. The department might have a little bit more recent information about, you know, where those programs are available in the state.
So it appeared to me,
Chair Chamberlain.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. It would appear to me that it's more of an incentive for getting people to go. To kind of drive people to that, students to that area. So that's fine. That would help. So, you know, so I'm okay with that. We're okay with that.
You know, Mr. Chair, I see that as an opportunity for students to transition from being consumers of technology to producers. And I think that's a powerful transition that's available to them.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're okay with that one. The second one, your Article 2, 29, Section 29, and ours, Article 2, Section 12, has to do with the dismissal of students issue. And it's obvious there's quite a bit of difference between those two. I'll just say this quickly. Is that we worked out, our language is short and simple. It kind of, our point was trying to democratize the process and listen to educators. They agree that, and I would agree that suspending students, kicking students out between K and 3 is not the best idea in the world anywhere, but they did want to make one exception for those who are violent or present safety issue concerns for the other students in the class. The second part, obviously, is the review of those policies by a local group and a school board, kind of democratizing, as I said earlier, the process of, and I think it's a really great idea that people from the community that are being impacted would have a role and play a role in addressing those concerns locally. And it might be a lot different than what we at the legislature are thinking, may or may not. So ours is short, it's compact, it democratizes it. Certainly, I think there's gonna be disagreement on how it goes. Manageable by the districts. So we believe it fits fairly well and doesn't increase the complexity and the mandates for the districts and still gives them control down at their level to deal with it. So I would not, at this time, we're not prepared to take the House language on that. We would certainly take the Senate language on that piece. So if we can't agree on the Senate language, I would just say we would skip that one, your Article 229 on Article 2, Section 12. So if we can't agree on taking the Senate language, I just prefer we set it aside for a little bit, if that's okay with you.
Mr. Chair, I want to hand the mic over to Chair Richardson, who can speak authoritatively on the differences between the two provisions. Chair Richardson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Chamberlain, just wanted to add a note of clarification that with the House language as well, it does build in an exception for excluding students who have serious issues that have been identified that go to safety. I think the difference between our language and your language is that before they could be excluded, it would require that there be actual supports that would be put into place prior to excluding any student that would have an ongoing serious concern related to their behavior.
Chair Chamberlain?
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Appreciate that. There's just a lot to unpack in Section 29 of the House bill. I understand, Chair Richardson, but it's just right now, I think, too much of a burden for our districts and schools. And some of the we probably talked to different educators, but a lot of the educators I've spoken to need to have a little more flexibility and how they manage these challenges. So perhaps I would suggest, Chair Richardson and Chair Dabney, we just set that provision aside for now so we can maybe talk about a little bit more, if that's all right.
Chair Richardson?
That is fine. Looking forward to further conversations on that, Chair Chamberlain.
Okay, thank you. So we'll put that aside. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Chair Chamberlain.
The other two provisions, your 4-6, Article 4, Section 6, Article 5, Section 7, and our similar articles, we have no problem with. They would be fine.
Thank you very much, Chair Chamberlain. Then let's try this. There's been some conversations and there needs to be an oral amendment to the provision on corrective action, House Article 4, Section 6, Senate Article 2, Section 30. After some conversations, I believe, with advocates in the department. Chair Richardson, you have an oral amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the oral amendment. I would move the oral amendment for the corrective action provision. And just to highlight again for members, that's on page R5-A4 of the side-by-side. That's line 164.2 of the House language. We would delete 2021 and insert 2022, making that effective. So that's my motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Chair Chamberlain, any questions about that?
Nope, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, members, the Richardson Amendment, all those in favor of the Richardson Amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Thank you, Chair Richardson. Then I move to adopt House Article 2, Section 17. Also, Senate Article 2, Section 9. House Article 4, Section 6, similar to Senate Article 2, Section 30. And in both of those cases, in Yes, both of those cases, we are accepting the House language or adopting the House language. And then lastly, House Article 5, Section 7, similar to Senate Article 4, Section 3. In that case, we are adopting the Senate language. First question, is everyone clear on the motion to adopt those three provisions? The first two provisions adopting the House language, the third provision, the Senate language, and that includes the oral amendment that we previously passed. Seeing no questions, all those, please unmute yourself. Members, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Senator, it appears that we're moving along.
Oh, yeah, just $600 million to move.
You know, once you get the momentum going, it's easy.
I'll leave it at that. Yeah. So I do have one other thing, Mr. Chair, when you're ready.
Go right ahead, Senator.
Yeah, so you're familiar with this language, the fixed language that the DeBrot Department mentioned to us about the nutrition formula adjustment for federal money?
Yes, sir.
Would you be okay if we adopted that tomorrow?
Let us take a look at that, and I'd certainly welcome the conversation.
Okay.
Right. Thank you for flagging that.
Yeah, well, they reached out to us, and would we be remiss, Mr. Chair, if we didn't say government is a wonderful thing, that in order to get our money, we have to spend money somewhere. So good for the kids. They're going to get some more food. That's excellent. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Anyway, you should have that. They worked with us and with their language. Take a look. Secondly, tomorrow we will have probably but no more than an hour of testimony on some items, and then we may have some things to send over to you to take a look at for you and your conferees and team. Okay?
We'll look forward to it, Mr. Chair.
That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, team.
Unless staff is going to call me up short, I believe that's everything we have as well.
Okay.
And nobody's told me I'm wrong yet, Mr. Chair, so I'm going to get out of here before they do. Mr. Chair and members, and to the testifiers, thank you all for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow. Be well. Thank you.